Welcome to the Down and Dirty Podcast, the ultimate guide to modern midlife dating. I'm your host, Celeste Moore, and I'm here to help you navigate the challenges of today's dating world. Think of me as your female version of Hitch, but better. With over 16 years of experience as a certified image consultant and dating coach, I've got the inside scoop on what women want. In this podcast, we're diving deep into the world of healthy masculinity and modern dating. It's a fast-changing industry, and here you'll find personal stories, expert insights, and candid conversations that will empower you to take control of your dating life. There's never been a better time to achieve your desired outcome, whether it's marriage, finding a significant other, securing a life partner, or simply regaining your dating confidence. We're here with you twice a week to explore the viewpoints and challenges in today's dating arena that resonate with every man seeking dating success and love. So let's dive into today's episode. We've got an exciting discussion lined up for you. Get ready for the double D's of dating, where dating dilemmas turn into dating triumphs. Welcome everybody to another episode of the Down and Dirty Podcast. As always, I am your host, Celeste Moore. Thanks again for jumping on here and listening to the show. It absolutely means the world to me. I'm forever grateful for all the amazing guests I get to have on an interview and continue to educate people and everyone listening here. Please don't forget to leave a review if you feel so inclined to and give that a 5-star. This help brings the show to the forefront so that people can find the content easier and in return help everyone. Before I dive into today's episode, I want to introduce my very special guest, Robert Mack. He is an Ivy League educated positive psychology expert, celebrity happiness coach, published author, and television host and producer. His work has been endorsed by Oprah, Vanessa Williams, Lisa Nichols, and many others. In addition to serving as a celebrity love coach for Famously Single on the E! Network for 2 seasons, Robert also worked as a consulting producer on camera expert for Mind Your Business on OWN Network and as an executive producer and host of Good Morning La La Land on Apple TV and Hulu. He's been featured on television shows like Good Morning America, The Today Show, CBS Morning Show, and Access Hollywood, and in magazines like GQ, Self Health, Cosmopolitan, Well and Good, and Glamour. So Robert's first book, Happiness from the Inside Out, The Art and Science of Fulfillment, is celebrity endorsed and critically acclaimed. His most recent release, Love from the Inside Out, Lessons and Inspiration for Loving Yourself, Your Life, and Each Other, is a bestseller. So thank you, Robert, for coming on today's show.
I'm excited to be here. So excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
It's always a pleasure. And I'm really excited to kind of get into your practice and kind of your why of why you kind of were led down this path of happiness coaching. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, you were an actor before and you've done a lot of TV prior and modeling. Is that correct?
That's right. Exactly. I was a model and acted for about 10 years.
Oh, wow. Okay. And so I would love to hear your story on kind of what led you down this path of happiness coaching.
For sure. So way before I was ever interested in modeling and acting, I was deeply depressed and really sad and super anxious. My first memories at about 6 or 7 years of age were just that, just self-loathing and so stressed out, so anxious. I was a perfectionist. And as I got older, I just thought I'd grow out of it. You know, I'd become happier and more peaceful, more joyful as I got older and as I accomplished some things. Well, I did accomplish lots of things. I was salutatorian in my high school class. I was also the most shy of my high school class. I had some friends and I got a college scholarship. I went on to work for a great consulting company. Even had a girlfriend at some point, which I thought I would never be able to have an experience. And despite all of that, I just kept getting more and more depressed. And I got to a place where I was so depressed, I began to experience a lot of suicidal ideation. So I thought a lot about killing myself. And so one day I decided I was going to do something about it. So I did some research and I decided that I was going to slash my wrist. You know, so I went to the kitchen and I got a kitchen knife and I dug it into my wrist. And the most unexpected thing happens, Celeste, you know, without anything in my external conditions or circumstances changing. In other words, I had a really good life and that almost made it worse. I was like, why do I feel so bad despite my life being so good objectively? So, you know, I stuck the knife in my wrist and without anything changing in my external conditions at all, I felt this deep peace. And limitless love and this ineffable joy, the kind of which I had never experienced before. And didn't understand why it was inexplicable, really. So I decided in that moment was going to postpone the suicide. So I got to figure out what this is. Why do I feel so much better despite my life not really changing in any noticeable way? And in that period, I began doing a different kind of research around happiness, like what it is, and depression and what that is. And I began applying everything I could possibly apply. And I made a decision that I was either going to live blissfully or not live at all. I always said, I can always kill myself later. For now, let me try this other path. And it's been several decades later, but I became happier and happier over time. It was like 2 steps forward, 1,000 steps back. But eventually, I found a program at Penn, the Masters of Applied Positive Psychology program. I matriculated into that, graduated, and opened my private practice. And things have been significantly different since then.
Yeah. I know that a lot of people deal with mental health issues. I did myself. And a little bit about me, I mean, just a teeny bit. I've been the last 2 years been dealing with this with my daughter, and she's a teenager. And it's not even just social anxieties and the pressures of being a teen nowadays, early diagnosis of bipolarism. And so thank God I'm a, you know, very involved parent. Otherwise, I don't think we would have picked it up as early. But I know that you've talked about this a little bit, but some people are born with depression, correct? It's like hereditary or genetic.
Yeah. So about 50% of our happiness score or rating is attributable to our genetic set point, meaning that some of us are wired a little higher for happiness, some of us are wired a little lower for happiness. But unlike eye color or height, our genetic set point for happiness is changeable. It's malleable. It's plastic. So we can improve it. I'm a testament to that. I'm sure that your daughter will be a testament to that. But yeah, so that's good news. It could be a little challenging and frustrating in the beginning when you feel as though you might have been wired a little lower for happiness, but there is a huge opportunity to become a lot happier.
That's great news, especially for, I mean, mental health is a struggle. And I'm so grateful that you were able to literally just take a moment when you were going through this such anguish and anxiety and hurt for so long at such a young age. I mean, that it developed at such a young age, but you were able to step back and like, okay, I like this feeling. And then what is that? I mean, that's very intuitive.
You nailed it. I mean, it's so easy to know that the stove is hot, right? That when I do this, it hurts. And that's part of the beauty of being a human being, is that we're all very aware of that. Sometimes we're more aware of that than, you know, at certain moments than other moments. But the key that you just pointed out there is to begin noticing what hurts and what doesn't, and to honor that. And some of us have these ideas, I know I certainly did, that it's that no pain, no gain. Mm-hmm. That if it feels good, it must be bad for you. And I get that, but I want to challenge that a little, because most of the depression and the unhappiness that so many of us experience is a result of not honoring and celebrating, respecting the intuitive knowing that we all have, that it feels good to feel good. Good to feel good. And it's not only good to feel good because it feels good, it's also good for you. So a lot of the science of feel good, you're more creative, you're a better problem solver, you make and save more money, you know, people rate you as more attractive, you're kinder, you're more charitable. You know, all these wonderful things happen simply because you're able to feel good. It's good for you.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, you can only give when you're fulfilled inside and when you love yourself and when you feel that there is this, I don't know, sense of worthiness that you can give back. And I think that takes, you know, I don't know, it definitely took me a little bit of time to figure that out, because growing up, I think I heard on one of your interviews that you are a people pleaser. And this has been my struggle, because I think you really, I don't know, I'll let you say what the downfalls of being a people pleaser is. But yeah, that's been a struggle. So
I love your confident vulnerability, your self-disclosure, Celeste. I've always loved that about you. It just shines through so beautifully and brilliantly.
It's such
quality. Yeah, absolutely. You can't fill up anybody else's bucket if yours is empty. You can only share what you have. You can only share what you know you have. And for that reason, happy people make better lovers. That's the way I often say it. Happy people make better lovers. They're more loving. They're more kind and more charitable. Just notice yourself when you're happy, when you're tapped into, your din turned on, and just really inspired, excited, life about anything you get along with. And everybody else is easier for you to get along with as well. And that's true of everyone. And so you're absolutely right. You know, priority number one, if you care about other people, is to make sure caring for yourself. You're taking care of yourself. When you're happy and you're alone, we call it happiness. Happy and you are with someone else, we call it love. You know, so when you share that happiness that is intrinsic and innate and inherent within you with other people, that's what we call it, or it becomes love. Be happy. Our love is really just your happiness shared. It's your self-love shared. That's all it really is. But we often complicate it and we try to do this thing where we fill up other people's bucket when it's empty. We try to love people when we don't love ourselves. And we try to be good to people when we haven't been good to ourselves. And that's always going to backfire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it's such a, I think, an important lesson when you start, I'm sure, this journey, right? Because I do believe a lot of people take those outside influences, or they had a really bad breakup, a bad relationship, or maybe they've had the same issue arise over and over and over. And then they're like, oh, well, maybe it's me. Maybe I'm the common denominator here. And then really teaching that, because I think, and I know that you have other practices that you help your clients, and I'm sure there's a couple more, but I'll let you kind of get into that so that maybe people listening here today don't feel so hopeless and helpless when it comes to that next relationship.
Yeah. So the first thing I'll say, just to reflect the wisdom of what you shared there, since it was fantastic. When we blame anybody or anything else for how we feel, we render ourselves powerless to do anything about it. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean that people can't affect us or influence us to feel certain ways. But at the end of the day, we have a lot more power and control than we think we do. In fact, we have ultimate power and ultimate control. And so we don't want to render ourselves powerless to live a happy, healthy, wealthy, or loving or lovable life. Okay. So that means that first step, when you recognize, wait, I might be the common denominator in all of these unhappy experiences or relationships, is something to celebrate. That means you're much more powerful than you've been giving yourself credit for. And so now the question is, how do I use that power for good, for happiness, for health, and for wealth? The first place to start for me is just what I might call happy or loving activities, but just spending more time doing things that uplift you, inspire you, and make you happy to be alive, and doing less, spending less time with activities that make you feel drained or demotivated or disincentivized or unhappy to be alive. That can feel hard at first, but you'll notice how many things we do that we think are important that we don't actually need to do that make us miserable. So that's just the first step, is identifying your happiness islands and happiness deserts, spending more time on your islands than some of your deserts. You know, you also want to do that with people, right? So the people that uplift you, inspire you, make you happy to be alive, spend more time with those people. The people that don't, spend less time. It's very simple in the beginning, right? Very simple. And I'd say it's simple all the way through. It's not always easy, but it's simple. And if you apply it over and over again, you'll be just sort of surprise yourself by how much you can accomplish in a very short period of time if you're very focused and single-minded about
it. Yeah, that's so powerful, because I keep going back to me, right? I mean, this is just the connection here. But last Fashion Week in New York was the very first Fashion Week I ever got invited to. And it was a big deal for me, because I've always wanted... It just was like one of the most amazing moments in my life. So I ended up taking my daughter, which was amazing as well. But it was the first time in all my years of living, I'm in my 40s, that I decided out of everyone and everything in my life that I was going to go and do this for myself. And it was the most amazing feeling I'd ever felt, because I'm the oldest of a big family. You know, I mean, the list goes on and on of you know, being a responsible and doing. And to take that moment and to just sit in that feeling, I was like, this is it. This is like, I'm doing more of this, even if it's a few things in the year.
Perfect example. It's a perfect example, right? It's something I love it. I love that you bring it back to you, because if there's one thing that we are an expert on more than anybody else, it's ourselves. Mm-hmm. Right? And so I love you sharing that. And boy, we've all done that in different ways, where we put off this thing that we think or know will make us super happy or make us feel inspired or come alive again. And we put it off for all kinds of reasons. Well, we got to take care of everybody else first. Or, well, it's going to be very expensive. Or, well, I don't have the time or energy for it. And the truth is, it's much more expensive to not do it. You know, to not do it is much more expensive. So I love you sharing that particular example. I think we could all use that as encouragement to do more and more of those things. And the beautiful thing is, when you do that, all of a sudden, you know, you've enriched your life. And by enriching yourself in your life, you're able to much more easily, automatically, and effortlessly enrich everybody else's life too. I'm sure that your daughter had a fantastic time because you were having a fantastic time, you know?
She did. Yeah. Thank you for sharing, like, you know, kind of bringing that back. So what would you say to, I get a lot of like, clients that come to me, you know, they just aren't successful at dating and forget about like, okay, it's me or whatever, but they don't have that confidence. They don't feel, they're kind of looking for happiness outside of them.
Yeah. That's the greatest challenge right there. You know, if you're looking for anything outside of yourself, you'll find it very difficult to find that thing, whatever it is. And you'll find it just as difficult to hold on to that thing. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you sort of want to recognize that you're the source of the peace, the love, the happiness, the abundance, the success yourself. Once you discover that, once you begin to feel that more and more deep, it reflected back to you everywhere in the world. And that's not just spiritual woo-woo. That's not a spiritual platitude. That's based in science. We know that. We know that happy people live longer. They make more money. They save more money. They get in relationships and get married earlier and stay married longer, whether they're in a relationship or married or not, right? They have a longer, better, lasting, happier, healthier, wealthier friendships, right? They're more charitable and kind, and their rate is more attracted by their peers. So we know that when you discover this wellspring of peace, love, joy, and self-love inside of yourself, it tends to seem or think that it shows up in the world as well. And so that's the first piece, is sort of recognizing that whatever it is that you're seeking, I promise you are that already. And your work is to discover the ways in which you are that already and to leave the world alone for a little while. That doesn't mean that you can't go on a date. It just means that you want to be careful of routing what you want to other people and other places and other activities, including date. It's amazing how many people, and I'm sure I knew I was one of these people, who dated with an intention to achieve or accomplish something through it. Nothing wrong with that, but you just want to check yourself on that. Why are you not a dating experience for itself? There's nothing more attractive, appealing, or sexy than someone who's in the moment, tapped in, tuned in, turned on, and just loving the experience of connecting with you. And then it leads to further connections. And there's nothing more detrimental to your dating life than trying to achieve something through this other person, turning this other person or this experience into a means to some other end. They can feel that. They can feel that you're there in a transactional as opposed to relational way. You're trying to get something from them, trying to extract something from them. And that's not very attractive. And that doesn't lead to further dates, you know? So yes, you nailed something here, which is remembering as much as you can that you are what you seek, and that only the loveless seek love and yet never find it. The loving, let's say the self-loving, never seek love and yet they always find it.
That's so cool. I mean, like, just listen to that again. Can you say that one more time? I really want to have everybody have that sink into you.
Yeah. Only the loveless, those who aren't self-loving, seek love and yet never find it. The loving, the self-loving, never seek love and yet they always find it.
That's so beautiful. That's so true. It's so true.
Yeah. There's something about needing nothing that attracts everyone.
And I think the number one thing that women find, one of the things they find really unattractive, is when a man is needy, and that shines through when they're looking to, oh, she'll make, you know, this perfect unit for me and I'll look good at work or I'll look good with my friends or my family or whatever that need is for them. Yeah.
Well,
so huge. Don't do that.
You nailed it. And there's a good reason that it's unattractive, that it's unappealing, right? Because this person, void, feeling of emptiness inside, that they're trying to use you, whoever you are out there in the world, to fill it with. And that never works, you know? And if it works, it never works for very long. We know that, you know? So next thing you know, you've been with that person for a year or 2 years or 10 years, and they still have the same complaints about you or about themselves. They're still unhappy. You can't love someone enough to shore up the lack of self-love that they're experiencing within themselves. You can't do it. You know, if their bucket has a hole in it, it doesn't matter how much love or how much water or how much of anything you pour into it, it just comes right out the other side, right out the other end. And some of us are like that, you know, in Buddhism, they call them hungry ghosts. But the idea is that your eyes are bigger than your stomach, and no matter what you put in, you know, it just doesn't make any difference. You just never.
So besides, you know, recognizing that happiness comes from within, and you talked a little bit about being present, what are some other tools? Did I miss some, or that you would, you know, have people practice? Because you said, what, 22 to 62 days or approximately? Okay. To basically rewire our old beliefs.
That's right. So if you care about being in a relationship, you want to be in a relationship, or you want to experience love, legendary love, exciting love, inspired love, healthy love, or you just want to date more effectively, more, you know, enjoyably, you definitely want to prioritize happiness above all else. And the way to prioritize happiness and to make sure that you're as happy and self-loving as possible is to first spend more time doing things that uplift you and inspire you and make you feel happy. Number two, spend more time with people that make you feel loved and happy. And that's some of the people who don't. Number three is then to learn to tell yourself happier, more self-loving stories about everything and everybody over and over again until it becomes automatic, until it becomes a habit. So that means telling the truthful, because you're not lying to yourself, telling yourself the truthful, but benefiting story about everything. So was that date last night terrible? Or was I reminded of how much I really love respectful, loving, confident, happy people? Whatever, right? Am I been a failure at dating and relationships and at love? Or is the opportunity to experience more love and more connection and more happiness greater now than it's ever been? Right? There's a truthful, better feeling way to talk about everything and everyone. And you want to practice that, and you want to do it for yourself so that you simply feel better. Because when you feel better, you'll do better. Life will go better. All of a sudden, you'll date better. Everything goes better when you feel happy, peaceful, self-loving. Right? So that's the sort of third step, is happy thoughts. First one is happy actions, happy people, happy thoughts. The fourth one is, for lots of people, more challenging because they think about it too much. But it's happy no thoughts. The idea sort of comes back to the presence piece, which is, you know, you don't need to think all day, every day about your love life or about what you're lacking or about anything that's going not so well in your life. Often, you'll do a lot better and you'll feel a lot better if you just take your mind off of it for a while. Can you focus on something that feels better when you focus on it instead of talking about all the failed relationships or all the women in the world or all the men in the world or X, Y, or Z? And so the idea is to practice thinking less and feeling more. If you can think less and feel more, think less and enjoy more, think less and love more, you'll discover that that love is reflected back to you from the world. Not always from the people you gave it to or shared it with, but it's reflected back to you, and it's reflected back to you in exponential amounts, right? Exponential amounts. So those are the four steps, very simple steps. But the idea is to spend more time doing fun, enjoyable, inspiring, happy things with fun, enjoyable, loving, happy people, thinking fun, loving, enjoyable, happy thoughts, and not thinking at all.
Yeah, I love that. I do feel too, like when you start to practice those steps, you know, I'm always telling people get into more alignment of like your gut, right? Go with what feels good and what, and your heart. Yes. Go with things that, you know, like put that just that joy into your life. And, but we also do have those like, okay, maybe the work situation sucks right now, or maybe this person I have to be around a lot is draining me like a vampire or something, you know? So, how, I think maybe the more you practice, it'll less affect you, or what are some recommendations?
Yes.
To eliminate some of that yuckiness.
Great question. First is to have some self-compassion, you know, be easy about it, be playful about it. It's easy to take it so seriously and obsess about it and want to be a perfectionist at it. You know, be patient. A better word for patience is just be present. Try to enjoy more moments for their own sake. When something really bothers you and you're really spiraling or spinning out, just distract yourself for a while. You don't need to reframe it right then and there. You don't need to fix it right then and there. Take a breather. Go for a little mindfulness walk. Take a nap. You know, anything that lets you feel better without so much effort. So I'd say that's the first piece, is don't work too hard at it, but do commit to it. The other thing is, you don't need to do it all. If you choose one thing and you do that one thing consistently and you master that one thing, you'll be blown away how it leads to all the other steps. automatically. Bruce Lee had a great quote, which I love, which is, if you're not the person who has practiced 10,000 kicks once, but the person who has practiced one kick 10,000 times, that person's lethal. You know, you could be lethal in a good way with this love thing and with this happiness thing. You just take one thing to say, you know, I'm going to try, as she said, to trust my intuition more and more, trust my gut more and more. If something feels off, I'm going to trust that. I don't need to make stories up about it. I'm just going to decide to pivot in a different direction. If you just did that, you'd be surprised how it led you to X, Y, and Z, other steps along the journey at just the right time. So you don't need to do a whole lot here, and you want to keep it playful and easy and relaxed. That's why kids are better at it than adults, and small animals are better at it than human beings. Keep it simple and keep it easy and playful.
Yeah, and they can pivot so much faster.
Oh my gosh, you get it? They have a fight. Like the kid will have knockdown, drag out, like fight. And then 2 seconds later, they're best friends and they're sharing a cookie. And you're like, how did this happen?
I love that. I do. I really love seeing like you through or a little child or just like experiencing things that they're doing. And it's like, you're like, oh yeah, we make shit so difficult.
That's exactly right. And that's why you see that show up in like, you know, you see it show up in science, you see it show up in scriptures, all religious spiritual traditions. When you hear things like, you know, childlike faith or childlike, it's not childish, it's childlike. There's still awe and wonder. And what that really is speaking to is, you know, getting out of your head, you know, just shake it off, shake things off and move on, pivot and move on. You know, the wake of a boat doesn't power the boat, right? So your past, whatever happened in the past, doesn't drive your life. So if you've had a series of bad relationships or you had a tough upbringing, sure, address it and do your best to heal it and resolve it. But it doesn't need to, in any particular moment, drive or steer or dictate your fate.
You're the captain of your own ship, right? Don't look back. I just, that's one thing I heard a long time ago, and it comes up and I'm like, wait, wait. You know, it seems so easy when you even, like you said, sounds easy, or it is easy, but you have to do the practice. You have to every day.
That's it. And you want to prioritize consistency over intensity, right?
Mm, it's not, okay.
You want to eat the whole meal in one bite, but you need to. You can, maybe your practice every day is a micro meditation. Micro meditation is just taking one breath, enjoying that one breath as deeply as humanly possible while you let all your other thoughts go. So you treat that one breath, this one moment, like it's the last breath, the last moment you ever had. And so you enjoy it. You're selfish about it. You're a hedonist about it. How can I choose this one breath and savor this one breath as deeply as humanly possible without pain? Right? And then you can return to worry, return to getting upset, whatever it is. But it's often you can do that simple practice. If you did nothing else, I promise that simple practice would let you feel more happiness and experience more peace and love, even if you did nothing else.
Yeah. Oh, that's so powerful. I'm going to try that. I'm going to start. I feel like I'll have a more productive day, you know?
I feel like you're plenty productive already, Celeste. I know that through, actually.
Well, maybe I'll just center myself then and not be so crazy.
Love it.
Yes, I really love that. Well, I hope everybody, you know, really got to take some tools away to stepping out of that. I want to say, like, it's not always negativity, but it could be depression. It could be outside sources that are affecting your ultimate happiness. Your ultimate goal in life is to be happy and to enjoy things. And I think, especially in society like this or going on in the world and, you know, always scrolling on the internet and then like stuff affects us all the time, like step off that for a minute. If you know that platform is derailing you or not in alignment right now, like take a minute and just step away.
Oh, I love that, Celeste. That gives me shivers because you're right about it. And this is why a lot of teachers will say, awareness is the answer to everything. What do they mean? It means if you can notice more and more how you feel throughout your day and lean in to things that feel good and lean out or away from things that don't feel good, you'll be surprised at how much better your life gets by just doing that simple thing. You know, when you're scrolling or doom scrolling and you're just feeling not so great, just lean out, lean away, something else for a little while, kind of stick to it. And when you're spending time with Celeste or you're having a great conversation with someone and you want to, you know, enjoying it, just lean in, be more present there. And that single shift would allow you to feel and experience the peace, love, and happiness that you spoke of, Celeste, and also become more productive, more creative, all these things, because it also allows you to enter into what we call flow state. Right? We all want to listen to flow state. That's where you're kept in, tuned in, turned on so much, so absorbed and engaged and consumed with what you're doing, you're not interested in evaluating how you're doing. And it's often happens when people are dating. They aren't in flow state. They aren't in the vortex. They aren't very present. They're too interested and too involved in evaluating how they're doing or how the date's going. Great time. If you have a great time, I promise the other person will have a great time. And if they don't, they'll quickly find their way out of your life. And, you know, you'll be better off either way.
Oh my gosh, that's what I preached.
I love it. I probably got it from you.
Oh my God. I was not the first person, but I'm trying to change the dating culture because everybody that I talk to or hear about, or it's very common to say, dating sucks, dating's exhausting, dating that. And I'm just like, yo, you have the power to just have a good time. You can choose an activity that you want to do. It's simple.
The last, like that needs preached from the rooftops and from the mountaintops. You nailed that. And I get it because we all have this destination addiction where we're just convinced the future is going to provide us something that the present doesn't currently offer us. And that's a mistake because we take the same mindset with us into the future. So then we get the guy, we get the girl, and then we're still the next thing. Now we got to have a kid. Now we have three kids. Well, now I need a divorce, find somebody else. Right. It's unending. You know, it's this game of whack-a-mole that we play with ourselves and play with our lives. And it's not something to beat ourselves up for. It's something that we can easily solve. You have to be vigilant about it. But if you're selfish in the way that I am and you care about feeling good and you trust the science and your life experience that has shown you and taught you that when you feel better, life goes better and you get what you want through this easier cheat code or shortcut or master key that we call simply being more present and enjoying your life and yourself more, you'd be surprised at how your life turns around without so much effort.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And I'm just going to add to that, and maybe that's what you're saying too, is like, I found that when I came from living in service to somebody, always putting myself out there, and I don't mean like I'm going to do everything for you and you're not going to do anything in life. But when I come from a place of how can I help you? How can I be of service? Whether it's just being present, right? Or being in alignment or just saying hello, right? I mean, all these beautiful things, I think human connecting, my life shifted in a way that I didn't have. You know, I need this. I feel like, you know, everybody's a victim or something.
That's so powerful. And I love that point there. And I want to underscore that because it's profound. You're absolutely right about that. And I agree with that wholeheartedly. And the key there is doing it without an expectation of reciprocity. If you expect someone to even say thank you, you'll find yourself caught in these traps occasionally, which is like, why did they help this person? They didn't even say thank you. They didn't even respond with appreciation. And you'll find yourself then saying, why am I doing it at all? But you can do it. And you can do it without an expectation of reward. And you can do it for the joy of it alone. You can do it for the joy of helping or being of service alone. And trusting that in time, the seed that you planted will grow. And appreciation will come back. Maybe not from that person, but from someone. That's a key. Because there was a period in time when I was trying to be of service and trying to be helpful. But I expected something back. I was really giving to get. And you're saying something so much purer than that. So much more powerful than that. Which is like, give and be of service because it makes you happy. And it also is a benefit to someone else, right? It makes you feel good to do it. And any of us who've done it from that place know that the true gift in giving is the giving itself. Mm-hmm. Right? The giving is the gift. It is the reward.
Yeah. Well, this is so amazing. I did not have time to read your books, but I did order them. So I'm really excited. I was even talking to my mom about it because both my parents have like married three times, divorced, you know, like whatever stories. But my mom seems to always be like, you know, looking for that guy. And I'm like, I know you're happy and you're successful, but stop. I'm like, you've got to read his book.
I so appreciate that. And that's key what you're saying there. It's sometimes hard to hear until you've experienced it. But once you've even had one experience where you're like, enjoy your life so much and where you are so much that you barely are taking notice of what you're lacking. All of a sudden, the guy shows up or 10 guys show up. Now you got a line of men that you're like, what am I going to do with it? You know, or whatever it is that you want in your life. It could be money, could be anything else. But there's something so attractive about needing that.
Yeah. So tell everybody a little bit about the difference in your book, the one that we're talking about in relationships, because I do feel, well, they're both about relationships, right? Self-relationship. But tell everybody a little bit more versus like, okay, there's a lot of books about relationships and love and marriage and what differentiates you and in your message?
Yeah, I would say I wrote Love from the Inside Out with no intention of pleasing anyone, even myself in a way, right? So I only wrote what was inspired, that felt divinely inspired. So if it came from a mind and it felt too logical and rational, I didn't trust that. I said, I don't want this to be my guesses. I don't want it to be Robert's guesses. I want this to come from a deeper knowing or a higher knowing than my own. You might call that life or source or universal intelligence or God. Doesn't matter what you call it. The point is I want it to be a deeper, more intuitive, more helpful and powerful teaching. So Love from the Inside Out is essentially one page meditations on true love. The kind of love that doesn't show up one day and disappear the next. The kind of love that is fulfilling. It fills you up full from the inside out. The kind of love that is infinite and eternal. Kind of love that doesn't depend on anyone else, what they think, what they do, who they are. And the kind of love that's able to enjoy everyone. And so, and sort of the argument there, the invitation there is to revisit or redefine what you mean when you say, I love you. When you say, I love you, what do you mean? And I think for a lot of us, it means, I love you as long as you, as I get my way, or I love, you know, but there's a, or I love you as long as we're in a relationship together. But the idea here is that love isn't an exclusive relationship that you have with one person only. It's an inclusive way of relating to everyone and everything in the whole world, starting with yourself. So it's really an invitation to look more deeply into the way in which you think about and experience love, and to drop all of these unproductive, unsupportive stories that we've been taught and that we've inherited around what it means to love someone or what it means to love yourself. So it's a sort of, in a way, it's a call to experience the kind of happily ever love that we all deep inside want, desire, deserve.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I love that message because you, like you said, I mean, it's so, it's not like, okay, this is what you do. Here are the steps. Like, it's really like dropping into yourself and really getting real and raw and like starting from there with the love, you know?
Oh, it's so good. I should have had you write the introduction or write, help me write the book. That was so good. You're right. It's what it is, Les. It's the dropping in and it's a real rawness. You're absolutely right about that. It's so beautifully stated, very eloquent.
Well, I'm so excited that you were here to, you know, tell everybody here about you can be happy, people. And even if you're destined, like, you know, I'm sure my family has the genetic gene of depression, it's plastic. So you can work on getting rid of that. You can work on molding and rewiring for love and like true happiness. I really, really love that. And I feel so grateful that you came on here. I want to ask you one personal question, if you don't mind.
Yeah, please.
What was one of your favorite dates and what was it?
Oh, that's a great question. I will say, and I mean this genuinely, my favorite date is usually the last one that I had. Because that's my intention. It's like I genuinely intend it to be, and I don't remember what the last date was exactly, right? But I know that's true though. So I'll say that on one hand. On the other, I'll say I had a fantastic time in Hana once. You know, it was Hawaii and it was a place outside of Maui. You drive 3 hours to the rainforest for a place called Hana. And, you know, it was just, it was at this cabin and we had this fantastic dinner and meal and none of the cell phones work because it's way out, you know, in the middle of nowhere. And, you know, it was just connected. It was great, rich conversation. There was also lots of periods of just quiet, silence, and stillness, and just looking out in the ocean. So I'd say that was probably one of my favorite memories.
Thank you for sharing. I love that you said connectivity, but you also said, which I don't think a lot of people know this, you can be quiet with another person and have that same love and the same comfortability. And that's progress.
Oh, in fact, to your point, I would suggest and recommend to people that's what love is. Love is communion. It's two hearts beating in rhythm and unison, two hearts in alignment or agreement, not two heads that agree about everything. That's powerful, right? Really hear that, because if you think that love is about agreement, that you have to agree with each other in order to experience love, you're not going to experience it at all or for very long or for very, or very deeply. But if you understand and can appreciate that there's a love underneath all of those thoughts and words, all of those beliefs and opinions that is there, even if and when you're in disagreement, and that you can tap into that within yourself, the other person can tap into it within themselves, and you can feel that, then, you know, we come to a true appreciation of the word namaste, you know, honor that place within you, which is also within me, where we are just one. You know, Rumi says, two lovers don't finally meet somewhere. They're within each other all. And so it's the increasing revelation and discovery of this, of oneness, this recognition that the life within me is the life within you. And that is thoughtless and that is wordless. And that doesn't mean you can't also have a conversation, but hit something huge, Celeste. I mean, it's not mystical, actually.
That's really beautiful because you shared it. And I think if you get to that point, you're definitely in a good place, a great place. Yeah. You're complete.
That's right. And I would argue that we're always in that place. Sometimes we recognize it and we call ourselves complete. Sometimes we don't and we call ourselves complete. Sometimes we don't recognize it. We call ourselves incomplete. But if you really just, in any moment, it's like honesty or integrity and kindness. It's always inside you. It's always inside you. In some moments we decide to live it. In some moments we don't. And there's no reason to beat ourselves up for either one. But yes, you nailed it. It's always inside. And we are always that. We are always whole, fully complete. Sometimes we are aware of it.
Well, thank you so much, Robert. Where can people purchase your books, find more information about you, so on and so forth?
Yeah, for sure. So you can find me at my website, coachrobmack.com. You can also find me on most social media platforms, most consistently Instagram, at robmackofficial. And you can find both my published books, Happiness from the Inside Out and Love from the Inside Out, everywhere great books are sold, including Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
I love it. Perfect. Well, again, thank you so much for being on the show. And I know everybody here definitely took a lot of nuggets from this show. So
if you enjoyed today's episode and want to support podcasts like ours, then please hit that subscribe button, leave a 5-star rating, and or invite others to listen. Your support is what helps us grow and continue to bring you valuable content. Thanks for hanging out with us on today's episode. Let's stay connected. You can find me on Instagram at Celeste Moore Image, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on today's discussion. For all the links, resources, and additional information mentioned in this episode, check out the show notes on my website, CelesteMoore.com. That's all for now, but stay tuned for our next episode where we'll dive into more exciting topics. Until then, see you next time, friends.